The following content has been provided by New St. Andrews College in Moscow, Idaho. For more information, visit us online at www.nsa.edu.
Hear the world calling, but some don't listen. They're only trying to drag you back into prison, that's right.
Welcome back to What Have You.
I'm Becca Merkel.
I'm Rachel Jankovic, and we came back this week. We gathered together in the car again.
After a week of flunking out badly. We didn't even really
come close
to making
a podcast. I actually think I thought of calling you to say, should we do a podcast? And it was on Thursday, which is already past the due. I was like, actually, I think we missed it. Never mind.
Well, the thing is, last week, it was your kids were already on summer break because the elementary students.
All but one. Yeah, one still in
the school. Elementary students get out a bit earlier than the secondary. So Rachel had all of her kids at home all day. I was giving finals.
Which is super quiet. And
really calm.
So relaxing. Yeah. So relaxing. And nobody wants to eat anything all day.
And meanwhile, I was up at Logos with a crazy schedule and giving finals all week. And I had switched a couple of classes. So I was doing oral finals, which is good because you're done with the grading as soon as you're done, except the bad thing is it takes like 42 times as long, so it's not a real
pluses and minuses to that way
to time saver really in the end. So anyway, that was, and then we had graduation, and we had, I don't even know what we had, it was
then,
too busy.
So Saturday we had a graduation and our cousin's wedding.
And a cousin's wedding, that's
and
right.
And then another wedding that we missed. And then, and then it was just much happenings. Many of them
lots
happened.
Lots of stuff.
Things went
anyway,
on.
Anyway, I'm
but
still
Becca,
grading.
What have you been doing?
Yes, having my ears like
grading.
Pinned flat back to my head.
Uh-huh.
The wind.
Uh-huh.
No, I was just grading this evening. I'm just finishing up the last stack of written finals. So all
victory
my grades
is almost yours.
Yeah, my grades have to be done by tomorrow at noon. So come hell or high water, I will have finished my grades by then. But it's also my 20th anniversary tomorrow.
Woo!
So we are going to run out of town tomorrow after I finish my grades.
At noon o'clock. They're going to blast out of town.
O'clock.
That's
yes.
Fun.
So anyway, it'll be really very much a like, okay, now I'm done. And then when we get back, I will try to settle into a summer
rhythm
routine
of life.
Of some sort.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
so
what I've been working on.
It's been a bit spicy. And then Knox graduated, our oldest son, graduated on Saturday. So that's just nutty. And he's off on a senior trip right now. And so that's really crazy. I liked what you said, that it was like the first of the popcorn. Because
the next batch of popcorn. He's only, it feels like, he's only the third graduate in the family. But I was the last one.
The third?
Fourth, sorry. Yeah, I meant there were three of us before him.
From Logos, yeah.
From Logos. And he's only the fourth, but I was the last one in 1998.
That's
so
really
it's been
funny.
A while. So then what happens, though, is that next year Gemma, next year Belle, next year Rory, the next year Lucy
and
Hero, and then the next year Lena and Amira, and then the next year Judah, and then the next year Seamus, and then the next year Daphne, and then the next year my twins Chloe and Titus, and then we have a year off.
1 year off.
And then in that year off, we're all going to skip Logos graduation. But the thing that I love is that I'm like, so 10 years, Knox will be like, I'm like, so
yeah,
Moses will still be in school. We'll probably be having these Mays that are full of baby showers and births and bridal showers. I mean, in the family, not weddings. And I will still be trying to hustle back in time for you know, basketball
Another
practice.
High school graduation. I know.
Still got to be doing
nuts.
That. But anyways, it does feel like here that comes. But you know what is so sweet about it is that it is. I have told my husband, you know, everybody says time goes so fast. You know, it's going so fast is what everyone's always saying. I say, I think everyone's wrong. It is not going so fast. There's just not very much time.
Like, well, I think that all the time. I'm like,
my God, no, that was not time.
Life is not long enough.
It was like, we're all, and it's just, there's no way we're going to get what we need to get done.
There's just a whole list of stuff that I hope we're going to be able to get to in heaven because it's not happening here.
Yeah, you're like, wouldn't that be great if our heavenly experience was just killing to-do lists?
I know.
Like, look at me accomplish everything in one
day.
Like,
I never even did really try, like, rock carving.
Wow. Well, that was not what I expected to come out. That was not it.
I'm just picturing, you know, like, what are things I would like to be able to do? I would love to be able to, like,
I'll tell you,
pick up a hammer and chisel.
One thing about doing old styles of arts and craft things is that...
Old styles of arts and crafts.
Yeah, the ancient ones. Pottery, like, weaving,
okay,
bread fine. Making, that's okay, sourdough. Sure. These are all things that I have done that are ancient in their craftsmanship,
like,
right?
Like, they're very... Grains.
Yeah, it is not like the rainbow loom. It's ancient, like, people been doing this since the get-go.
Sure.
But let me tell you the bad downer about that. Is that if it was the nifty knitter you were trying to master, there's actually not a really forever long depth of places you need to understand and know what happened and do this.
Uh-huh.
So we're very much dabblers in the pottery. You know, we dabble about in the garage and track a ton of clay into our house, but other than that, we don't accomplish very much. But my husband and I are like, we have got to step up our glazing game. Like, we've just been lame at glazing. We were working so hard on just being able to make a stupid cylinder that we basically just glazed it however, but it's always coming out like, wow, we've got to do better than this. People who do pottery have to do better than this at the glaze. Well, you would begin researching that, and it is like,
oh yeah,
are you even joking me? Like,
oh, I know.
The levels that this goes to, because it goes back forever, it goes to 1,000 million different cultures and traditions. It goes, like, there's no end to and people are still pioneering new fields of glazing effects today.
I was just watching a video made in the 60s from a beautiful English china factory, and it's so
you've been super busy.
I have been really, this was like 2 weeks ago, come on now. This was before the crisis. No, but it's like beautiful stuff.
Oh yeah,
and there's all these different techniques and all of the you know, how they make a plate. I was so fascinated
That's
by
fun,
how they make a plate.
Well, there's a lot of different ways to make them.
Well, this was a neat way.
There's this one Asian potter that is just disgustingly good that Luke and I keep watching him on YouTube. And he wedges his clay and it looks like a beautiful sea creature. It's like coming out like he's just kneading the clay and it's coming out like a huge seashell. You know, like it's like in this beautiful big spiral of gorgeousness. And everything he makes, he's just like, you know, you just do this. And it's like, you just, you know, whip off with this fine porcelain thing. Like, he's doing exactly what he wants to do the whole time without any. And it, you know what it is? It's a thing that when you watch the videos, people doing it, you're like, oh, I could totally do that. I could totally center the clay.
Well, it's like watching somebody who's amazingly good at, like, downhill skiing.
Yeah, like, easy.
Looks
so
fine.
But then you get your own hands on the wheel. You know, we're like, we're trying to figure out how to center the clay all by ourselves and with no instructions other than occasional YouTubing. We bought the potter's wheel to learn. So we just got the clay, we got the wheel, we're like, now what? And I think we didn't even have clay when we first got the wheel, so we went to, there's nowhere in town we could buy it, so we went to Michael's and bought some, like,
that's
some kind of, like,
clay.
Air-dry clay.
That's horrible.
What was the best we could do? I mean, it was, like, one step up from Play-Doh.
Yeah.
We made a couple, we made several in those early days, several sort of dog dish like bowl.
Like a nice ashtray.
It was like a larger than you would ever need ashtray. But the thing is so funny is you try to center the clay and it is like, oh my word. It is very different looking.
Yeah.
When you see someone do it, you're like, oh, they just, but I didn't realize I'd be like
just
bracing my elbow on my leg and pushing as hard as you can. And like, it's like, and it's very physical, very fun. But anyways, we're getting better. I made one mug I was feeling a little smug about. I was like, check that out. It's a mug. I'm feeling smug about it. And it was because generally I go really wrong on the handles. And one interesting thing with the clay is when you start making something, it's like part of your brain leaves. You can't access it anymore and you don't know how big a normal mug is. You're like, this is going to be huge. And then by the time you're done with it and you actually fire it, you're like,
get like a little
like
double shot.
4 ounce mug. Like, I don't know. You just can't, you have no perspective. So
yeah,
we were doing a mug thing where we just kept making mugs to try to just you know, just one size clay, just keep working on it.
It's fine. Yeah.
Anyways, but the thing I meant about that, the older the craft, the more infinite the body of knowledge master.
That's for sure.
The more you're like, I'll never know. I'll never be able to do this like people do this. Yeah. And there's something fun about that. There's something like you're participating in something much bigger and older than you'll ever, you'll never pioneer it.
No, it's really fun. I love encountering something where you can just keep peeling back the layers and discovering more. Oh my word, there's the weirdest, weird, like, rain windstorm just blew in out of nowhere.
I'm not sure that that's, I think what you're seeing is all the aphids spit on the outside.
No, look it back.
Yeah. I don't see that. Interesting. Interesting weather event.
Yeah, it is an interesting
weather event. Yeah, blow by blow accounts of the weather event.
Wind, guys. Yeah. Wind is happening.
I see some debris in the air. I'm seeing some dust. Yes. So anyways,
kind of a ride.
That's what we've been doing, is entering summer. In no kind of a chill manner at all. Like, at all. Like, so funny.
I do feel like we've been running our fastest down the moving sidewalk, and that exit off is
oh my word, it's so bad.
This is so stagger.
It's really, this is a bigger thought here, but I am actually planning on writing something about this, but whatever. I'll hope that people who read that what I write don't listen to the podcast, or they won't be sick of me.
There's no crossover here.
Yeah, whatever. But because all the kids have been at home, and it is so wild, and not in a bad way at all. Like, it's just wild in a, someone is always has something to tell you about, someone is always hungry. No, everyone's always hungry because they have to acclimate to the life of, they don't struggle with this when they go to school. They pack a lunch. They just eat lunch. They're not all day begging their teachers.
Well, they do struggle with it because at 10:30, they're sitting there going, oh, I'm so hungry and I have to sit here for another hour.
Yeah, but my kids take, they eat something out of their lunch a lot of times at their first recess, and then they save something for the last recess. So they're kind of just, they have their snacks.
That's very organized of you.
Well, whatever the case, it's because they have, like, no time to actually eat their lunch. So they strategize eating it through the, like, anyways. But the point in all this is that they have to adjust to being at home.
Yeah.
Also that we don't just eat all day at home. We actually take breaks from eating.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, we're just having this time where, like, I was making bread, Lena's making a cake, Chloe wanted to do something, and I'm like, yes, make the satay dip for dinner. So she's like following a recipe. You know, Chloe's 9. It was like, could we have more going on in the kitchen right now? And the answer really is no. There was no way, because those were the people actually trying to make something. Everyone else, of course, was just milling about in there, you know, being part of the scene. And it's all very sweet, but it's super intense. It's just intense in a, like, I feel like I need to go lay down in my bedroom and let the steam whistle out my eyeballs for a minute in the middle of the day. Like,
see, yesterday, my two of my girls decided to have a baking challenge of some sort where they did not use a recipe and they had to come up with a chocolate dessert. I was not home at the moment. One of them came out, like, basically... we'll pretend they're not going to listen to this later. It's kind of like a slab of chocolate-flavored butter. And actually, I tasted some, and it's surprisingly not bad. Like, it was, but it's very, like, it was very buttery chocolate slab. The other one, they whipped up some kind of a, like, cinnamon clove chocolate caramel thing on a pie kind of. They really went to town. Anyway, so yeah, I've got those sitting on my counter right now and
enticing you.
Yeah, it's the summertime.
Yeah, people but the stuff. Thing that was really fun, well, I was thinking about telling my husband this is what I was going to write about, is that it is in a very intense and very demanding time. And it's not because it has to be. It's not intense and demanding because I can't control the kids or make them go. Yeah. It's not that. It is that what I want to give them is something that is very intense and very demanding. You know, It just is.
Well, no, you could smother them and turn them into boring humans.
Oh, I could be like, watch the TV all day. I could say, you can't be up here doing anything.
Sit in your room and read a book.
Yeah, or go outside and stay outside and don't talk to me. And I'm not going to do any of those things. So instead, I'm fielding interesting questions.
And the thing is, if you were doing those things, you would be creating a lot of boring humans.
Not just boring. This is what I was telling my husband. I said, imagine a time in your life. Like, just use your imagination and imagine being really discouraged, really, like, you've been working really hard and things are hard and, you know, whatever. You imagine a hard time when you could really use a friend, you know, like one of those times. And then imagine the kind of friend who just bears trials with joy and will, like, not that they're not feeling, but that they're encouraging because they're like, we're here with you and we also can handle adversity. We also can, you know, like, we can be thoughtful. We are creative. We're fun people to talk to. We're, you know, like, sometimes you just, a friend who is distracting is so encouraging.
Yeah.
Like, I know your trouble, but mostly let's talk about something else that we could turn, you know, like, let's think bigger, let's move past this or whatever. Anyways, I'm saying, think of that. And then I'm like, that is my job right now. That is what I'm doing in these days, is making these seven people into that friend. Like, and not just not for me. I'm just saying, making the kind of humans who joyfully face adversity and are like, and you're not going to do it by me not joyfully facing. Like, it's just, I feel like it's so much what I'm doing with them is exactly the people I want them to be. And that's incredible amounts of output right now because I have seven of them.
Yeah.
But I imagine that in 30 years, it will be incredible amounts of input because there are seven of them. Like, you know, the fact that you're multiplying this all is like, I know that there will be people who will always be like, oh, mom, let me handle the desserts for that. Let me do, you know, like, even though right now I probably would prefer in my selfish heart to be like, I'll handle it. Like, everybody go away and let me handle it. At the same time, I know I don't want that long term. I know that what I want is the kind of people who are major contributors and fun and entertaining and, like, interesting. And that requires me going ahead and floating the paper log cabin endeavors with the glue guns that were all over the floor and, you know, just all of the things that are happening. It's like, you know what? Yes.
Yeah, because often I think it's easy to forget what it is that your project is. And we feel like our project is a tidy living room when actually our project is this little bundle of souls.
Yes.
And I am building those. I am actually not trying to build the perfect Pinterest house.
No, or the best organized shoes by the door. That's not my main game. Although, one thing, my husband has said this a lot, I'm sure other people have said this, it's just that, you know, the frustrating part of housekeeping is just the repetitive nature of it, the like, oh my word, here's another dinner. Oh my word, how did this happen already? And one of the things that he has said so many times, and it's always encouraging, so it was like, nothing that you do will last. It was like, nothing. All of the work is total vanity and futile. It's like, except these people. Like, they are eternal. Like, every one of them individually, this is eternal. It is the only work I will ever do that will last.
Yeah.
Like, the only thing, you know, you're building up these little people, you're making people, like, be courageous when they wanted to be fearful. It's like, these are eternal things that you're doing.
Yeah.
But the general and I love having the house clean and organized. I love that, but it is not my main, you know, it's like, that's down the line, you know, like, it's not the most important
and thing. Having the house clean and organized can be a tool by which you build better humans, but it can also be a tool by which you batter down the humans that are in your midst. And that, it's so easy to let the one displace the other, where it's like, what are you doing? Did you think you lived here or something?
What on earth? Or I've said this before, that, you know, when you if you made a beautiful meal and you sent it to a table, you're like, you know, a chef in the kitchen. You send out a beautiful plated meal. If they all came back to you untouched,
just as beautiful,
something has gone wrong.
Oh my word!
And the work that and it would not please a chef to have the food coming back untouched. It would not even please a chef to have the food coming back with major chunks left on it.
Let me tell you from personal experience that one time we invited a person to dinner. It was Thanksgiving dinner. And we invited him because he didn't have anywhere to go. And he came and was the biggest pud at Thanksgiving dinner that I was so out of charity with him by the end because he wouldn't eat. Yeah. He wouldn't eat anything. And Thanksgiving dinner, you have basically been cooking for like 4 days yeah. straight. And he kind of sits there and he takes like a little dollop of something and sort of pokes at it. He wouldn't even eat dessert. He said, no, thank you on all the pies. And I was ready to be like, I'm sorry. You will eat your apple pie.
Open up because your mouth. Like, open you up your mouth and let me stuff this in there.
Do you know how much cooking has gone into this? You will eat your darned sweet potatoes or whatever it was.
That was so funny.
But yeah, but the
you're
thing
like,
is like
straight up that what's that woman who's so famous for her Thanksgiving letter? Marnie. You ready to do that? Ready to write a Thanksgiving letter?
No, but you know the person.
Susan, do not use the blue platter you used last year that was too clumsy and large.
No.
You will bring them at 28 degrees no, so that they can
that.
Thaw. Yeah,
it is
so
not
funny.
That. It is the. What it is. You put a bunch of effort into something lovely, and then somebody right. who sits there and makes a fat face at
right.
it.
Right, so my point with the thing about a chef not being happy yeah. if something came back untouched is that...
That's what I mean.
Is that like, it's a pain I need in the to, neck. I need to think of the work I'm doing on my home as that kind of yes. consumable material.
Yeah.
And it's incredibly accurate because if you go clean the whole living room and arrange it nicely, where does everyone go? They dive into the living room. Yeah. I mean, they are like, I can't even yeah, wait to do a puzzle right here.
I just remember like, when my wow. kids were little, you clean up the like play area.
They're all in it.
They love it. They want to get in
oh,
there.
Oh, the bookshelves. I tidy up the bookshelves and my kids act like they've never seen any of the books.
No, and it's
never
like,
mind that they're all out of place because everyone's been handling the
like
books every
day. But it's such a blessing to them.
No, and but they can't wait to eat it up. They're yeah. like hanging over your shoulder.
Yeah, like
when is this going to be ready?
A beautiful dinner. Yeah.
It's a good thing for me to think about that the way I want my home to be is a beautiful plated dinner.
Yeah.
But even more importantly than it being beautiful and plated, I want it to be the thing everyone wanted to eat.
Yeah.
Which is like, can I please
also,
get in here?
You don't want it to be a bunch of cleverly, you know, like disguised artificial food that nobody can eat.
Oh, yeah.
And
right.
that is very easy. I think especially for very type A kinds of ladies. It can be,
right.
they like things the way they like them. It will be organized this way. You may not touch this. You may not uh-huh. do that. The living room must stay this
way. I remember, I think mom.
And that's an artificial meal that you're serving up.
Right. And some things that were a hard adjustment in my life. Like I remember as a kid, mom would, I don't know if I remember it for us or if I remember mom just telling someone this or however I remember it. The advice of just like, oh, just have them put back one toy when they're, and then get something else out instead of letting them just like dump all the toys or do whatever, which I don't allow that either. But the funniness of having more children closer together in age is that it just does not, that is not the way life is going. Like one person's like playing with the Duplos when a second person joins them. And then the third person brings the stuffed animals to start a game of vet yeah. service. And then they decide to use the laundry basket for that in the Duplos. And then they're building dog dishes out of yeah. something else. Like, it just sort of...
But mom never did that, though, because like, we were always making blanket forts all over the
but
house.
Mom was not at all uptight, but there were three of us. It was a different... It's just a different dynamic. I was saying it was a hard adjustment for me. I would always think when I had all these little kids, like I should be able to control
yeah,
this.
Right.
And the frustration for me was always coming in that I knew enough to know I can't be the kind of mom who won't allow this
right.
obviously
right.
healthy, obviously joyful, obviously yep. really, obviously, what's the word I'm looking for? It's like little souls that are really prospering.
Yes.
Like where they're having an awesome time together. And you want to be like, no, you can't do that with the throw pillow. How dare you touch my throw pillow when you're obviously being the coolest kids. You know, you just can't be like yeah. that. But it was a battle for me because I wanted everything. I was a person yeah. who had grown up with that. Like, let me clean my room. And turn all the right lights on and know that everything is exactly where I want it. And I admire the view.
Yeah.
And that is how I wanted to.
Right.
That was not the part of my personality that God thought was awesome. Surprise, convincingly. He was like, let's scrap that and look for something else.
Let's prune a different part.
It's like, wouldn't it be great if she could just spend her whole life with all the right lights on? I was like, no, he did not feel that way about my future. Okay, it's all been good.
Oh, that's funny.
It's the thing I've just been thinking about is more like, what I want my kids to be in the long run is the kind of people who are hugely encouraging to all the people around them, all the people that they can bless. And right now they're in the like boot camp of learning those skills.
Yeah.
And I happen to be the main instructor. I better catch up on those skills because you're like, I need to be blessing my children at the same rate as I want them all blessing people.
Yeah. Well, and then switching topics.
Okay.
We were talking earlier too about
privacy. Maybe
not like how to not take personal grievances about your husband or your parents or your children or your siblings or your friends. How to not take those to other people in a way that's super unproductive, which I guess is just another word for gossip, but or another way of describing gossip.
Right.
But often people share things, and this is something that my mother-in-law said one time that I thought was so very wise of her. She said, you know, if a married couple has some kind of little bump, and then the wife, let's say, goes and tells her mother all the things that her husband did and their disagreement about whatever it was. She said, you know, the thing is that the husband and wife will make it up. Probably, and they'll move on and they'll forget all about it and they'll forget that it ever happened, but the mother will not. She will have that locked away in her memory, and she will be thinking about what a jerk that guy was to her daughter. And the daughter may forget, you know, the next day that this ever happened, but the people that you tell don't have the ongoing relationship with the love and everything that just rolls past it. So it's like if you go and tell somebody else, you've entered it into a ledger, which now you can't really erase because...
I think there's two sides to think about because one of that is to not be that person. Like, you know it's in Voyage of the Dawn Treader, right? Where Lucy looks in the book and sees her friends talking about her.
Yes.
And I always kind of mind what Aslan says about that afterwards because... I should have looked it up if I was going to talk about that part of it, but I always feel like it leaves it at such a hopeless place. Like now that you've seen that, you can never go back to be, he kind of is basically saying you can never, you shouldn't have looked at that because it was not your business.
Well, but, it isn't because often if we really knew what other people thought of us, we would be
I'm not discouraged about that part of it. I'm saying it was right after he says you shouldn't have looked at that. Like you had no right to look at that because they were just trying to impress each other and it wasn't really about you. But it leaves it in a place that's like now you can never
unhear
it. Was kind of like you can never overcome that. And I don't, that's the part of it that I'm like, I prefer.
Well, I don't know that it's you can't overcome it. It's just that now it's there.
I doubt, I'm not trying to really pick a fight with Lewis because I really am fond of him. And I have cited that part many times because it's relevant. But one of the things is that if you hear an offense in passing, one thing that is really important, I think, is to recognize the fact that the person who did it would never know they should apologize to you.
Yeah, right.
They would never, like, for instance, with the example that you just gave, a husband could have been unkind to his wife, then repented, then apologized to her and made it up to her totally by being really clear. You know, like, I was being a punk about whatever. Like, forgive me. I love you. Move right on. We're all fine. We're, like, better than before. But he didn't know he needed to get on the phone and call his mother-in-law.
Or
the book group. And be like, hey, prayer chain friends.
Yeah.
I needed to apologize to all of you for the thing that I said to my wife that I didn't actually even mean. I was feeling testy that she... did something. You know what I mean? Yeah. Whatever. And you think, well, he didn't know to apologize to them, which is why that just went into a bad place where they can't even make it
up. But the thing is that the wife in that situation is the one who is being disloyal, right? It's like the husband might have been unkind and then she's being disloyal by going and she's not protecting his reputation or his good name, which is what we ought to be doing, is protecting the good name of our children and our husbands and our, you know.
You might want to say,
however,
just go ahead and put the qualifications in there since that's such a hot topic.
Well, that's what we were going to say, is that, like, of course there's times when you have to go for help. And one of the things that, like, our grandparents always said is, how do you know if you should tell somebody? And I think it's really a smart test is, are they part of the problem or part of the solution? If they're neither, then you have no business telling them. So, like, of course there are times when a wife needs to go get help, but she probably doesn't need it from her book group. She needs it from the pastor.
And it's really common for women, say that there was a husband who's being emotionally abusive, and he should not be. But it is very common for women to be wildly disloyal as a wife by telling all of the women, and then wildly disloyal as a Christian by not going to the elders, by not going to people who would actually... who could actually
do something.
Or who could say, if you keep acting like an unbeliever, we will treat you publicly like an unbeliever. Like, there is consequences to this. And you don't, and the reason that women do this is they go blab to everyone about it, but then they like the status of being a person who everyone is focused on. So they don't want to say it's okay. It's, you know what I mean? Like, or they don't want to go get counsel that would actually also check on what they've been doing. Like,
or that will actually
follow through and do something.
Well, it's like, if you go and tell the pastor, then suddenly you're not playing with Monopoly money anymore.
No, it's like all of a sudden this is some real cash you're playing with. And what happens
and there's
is
lots
that,
of women that are too cowardly to do that.
What happens is they'll say something like, he's just terrible about this and such. And then as soon as the pastor or someone's like, okay, so this is the steps we're going to take. It's like, no, actually, I didn't want to be on the books for that. Right. Because that's not really... accurate anyways, you know what I mean? Like, basically, I don't actually think that that's what was happening.
Yeah, so
you know,
lots
like,
of times,
I'm changing my mind.
It's just, well, it's just nothing but, what's the word I'm looking for? It's like unprofitable in every way to go talk to people who are not part of either the problem. Like, sometimes you have, like, a four-way snarl of some kind, and you have to discuss it with the people
with
who are
involved.
With
multiple people,
you have to go get the two or three witnesses, because there were two or three witnesses, and you have to go, you know, pursue it to the people who are part of the problem. But spreading the news through the back channels does
nothing...
We're just
not biblically dealing with it.
Yeah, it's just destructive. And, and so, and you can really damage relationships kind of irreparably, where the mother-in-law now forever thinks that her son-in-law is a punk, and it's because...
But over things like he forgot to get the milk when I asked him to. Now, we're not talking about... we're not... I just want to put it in a different class. We're not talking about...
Abusive
too bad
husbands.
You told your mom that your husband was having an affair.
No,
like,
no, no,
shouldn't
no,
have done that.
No.
We're talking about the level of petty grievances in a marriage.
Christian marriages. Both people are walking with the Lord and yet are still sinners. And then there's lots of ways where mothers can do this about their kids. Like, they can gripe about their teenage son, or they can gripe about their daughter in a way that their friends will remember. And it's just, it's basically like, it's just a really unkind thing to do to your children. And I, gosh, should I sail into uncharted territory here and say, I feel like a lot of those, like, mom videos online are so horrible, where all of the jokes are about how bad the kids are and how hideous it is to be a mom, and how, and it's like, do you not think that your kids are going to watch that later, or, you know, and how, you know what I mean?
I should just think, won't your attitude now impact them? Because it will. Like, like the fact
and
that
I
you're
get,
like,
some of them are kind of funny. Like, they can be kind of funny. But it's just, the whole joke rests on running down your children, who you really should be respecting, even from
and
the time they're
up,
little.
But you should be building them up beyond where they are currently. Like, there's a certain kind of friend that you can think of as being like a running partner, who joins in and just makes you work harder.
Yeah.
And that's just such a wonderful kind of a friend. A friend who assumes better of you than you assumed.
Yes.
And you're like, no, I think I can do that. I think I can. You know what I mean? Like, where it pushes you. And that's the kind of friend that you want to always be being to your children.
Yeah.
If not pointing out how bad they are at things, but instead bringing them along and being like, I know you can do this. You know, like, I know that you're a good friend in this, and you're going to, you know.
And they should know that they can trust their mother.
Yes.
Their mother's not going to go tell embarrassing stories to all their friends.
Right. And one thing I'm going to mention here that is a good thing to do if you do in disciplining children, something that I think is just a wonderful practice. It's very easy to get into the just automatic, you know, whatever you're doing. You're just kind of you know, you're just kind of going through that, like, you shouldn't have talked like that because that was, you know, whatever. You're not really. One thing that I do, not all the time, but what I try to do is when we pray with them, and I have them pray, but then I pray and actually spend some time thanking God for this child and telling them by telling God what we think of them, like, and how thankful we are for them and how we're so thankful that he is so kind and so brave and so, you know, like, whatever, and saying and asking God in front of your child to help you be wise parents of this wonderful person. And like, and the thing that I have, the littler the kid, the sweeter the response to this. It's like where they rub their feet together. They're so blessed. Like where they're just like snuggling in with you, feeling like, but it is this, it is the statements of this is who you are is so important to kids.
Yeah.
And when you say things, and if you haven't done this, you try it sometime, where you say, you know what your dad and I have noticed about you.
Yeah.
And then we tell them what we think of them, not their problems. We tell them what we think of their
virtues.
And we say, we're so thankful that you've been this way, and we see this in you, and we love that, and we want that to keep growing.
Yeah.
And we see, and you know what, that is so helpful for them, because sometimes they're like, really? I am?
Yeah.
Like, they honestly have no clue. And you tell them that, and they're like,
no, it's very formative.
It is, because they're like, I'm the kind of person. And do you know what, I remember that? I remember that when I was really little, probably like 5. Or maybe 6. I had my baby quilt still. That was like a weird 80s puffy pastel plaid thing with like a staticky fabric on the back. But I loved it. I thought it was so beautiful. It was like pastel plaid. And in our bedroom, I arranged it under the window, the quilt, with a cassette player on it. And something else on there. I don't know what else I had, but it was like a vignette of the baby quilt with a cassette player on it. This is exactly like Blair would so do this. Blair like hangs random ensembles on her curtain rods and stuff, and I'm like, wait, what happened here? She's like, I whipped up a little something, hung it on the wall. So anyways, I remember going to get Mom to show her, and her coming in and her saying, and it's so funny that I can remember this in our room with the pink walls and the stenciled hearts around the top. Uh-huh. And I remember Mom saying, oh, Rachel, you always make things so beautiful. And I know, I remember what I did. And I know that what she said was not actually that on point with what I had done. But it was like, but she was expressing admiration for the fact that I wanted to, I wanted to make it beautiful and that I tried. And the thing that's funny is that I don't mean to, but that is something that stuck with me as something that I always wanted to do.
Yeah.
Was like, make things, and it was like, it's funny, started at a very early age. You know, I went and tried it, but Mom affirmed that.
Yeah.
And it was like,
which is very different, I might throw in, than forcing your children to achieve all the things you want them to achieve and insisting that they perform in all of the right categories. But it's, you know, but it's just encouraging them where you see their strengths and trying to, you know, add to it. But
I'm trying one thing. I just have to say this because it's on topic here. One thing I'm doing with my kids this summer. Well, a theme of things. I mentioned another one about doing the Bible reading, and then I bought everybody a blank sketchbook, and we have one little case of sketching pencils.
Yeah.
And every day we do a 15-minute sketching challenge where we all draw the same thing. So like today we did an apple. And the rules are you only get to touch the eraser one time.
Oh, nice.
Like, okay. So the erasers are in the middle, but it's like, you can touch it once in the challenge, but we'll all draw it. And they have loved that so much. And so then there's another thing that I'm doing, which is a project for each one of them that's something they want to be better at but don't like working on.
Oh, sure.
Which is something that
the piano.
Something that they got out of fellowship with, like a project that they wished they were good at, but they aren't. So that's another thing that we're doing as 20 minutes, like, just work on that for 20 minutes.
That's very cool.
Anyways.
That's a great idea.
It's things to push through. It's like you can actually, that's what I want them to remember, is that you can actually get a lot better at things by just pushing yourself.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Okay, so look at, we're already tagging our heads off. So what's a good recommend? What do you ever recommend?
Yes, I'm reading a book that I started last night. I am not a good one at pacing myself on the books, but I started it last night and I'm probably 2/3 of the way done with it now. So, okay. You know, I'll be done in a minute, but it's Boys in the Boat. It's the, it's a true story of the, University of Washington crew team that won the Berlin Olympics. And,
very fun.
And it's the story of their, it's mostly the story of the, well, at least so far, it's mostly kind of one main character with, who is actually, I think, a neighbor of the author. That,
okay.
And that he went in and met him when he was, like, dying of, so in his old age, yeah. He got the story, and then he wrote the whole okay. book about it. And it's about, it's really lovely and very moving. Like, it's just, it's that time period, it's just shockingly, like,
hard.
Yes, it was a granddad, and it's fun because our grandpa rowed for the Navy, for the Naval Academy,
yeah.
And our granddad was there's a lot that was their life about this. That was the like yeah. the same time period, obviously, and the Depression era, but like a country that's still reeling from World War One, but as World War Two is kind of heating up, and yeah. then there are all these other things that, you know, if you're not think when you think of it in terms of the life of a person in the country, and you're like the dust bowls and yeah. the everybody at like no food for, you know, and okay. and the main guy Joe has just a really hard past, but you know, it's like Spokane area, mm-hmm. It's where we live, where yeah. a lot of this happened, mm-hmm. And obviously Seattle area, and it is just a lovely.
No, it's fun.
Lovely. Like, it's very kind of Cinderella Man, I think. It's very, like, okay. the hard knock life.
Right.
And but it's one of the funniest things in that book is that his gold medal, when he's an old man, his Olympic gold medal disappeared from their house.
Oh, no.
Right? They looked everywhere, couldn't find his Olympic gold medal. From the Berlin Olympics.
Yeah.
It's not like one that you'd want to lose as a
right.
family.
Right.
They had no idea. Then later they were remodeling and found it in a wall that apparently a squirrel had taken a shine to it and
oh
took
word.
It up and nested with it somewhere. I was like, that is the weirdest. The weird, like, I'm so thankful for them that they found it. Like,
that is funny.
Anyways, an indoor squirrel.
That's cool.
A squirrel that thieves your gold medal from the Olympics. All right, what's your recommend?
Goodness. Well, I'm not, gosh, reading right now. I just started reading. This is really a hot recommend that nobody's ever thought of. I just started reading The Magician's Nephew again last night.
Because I don't know why you couldn't have recommended the Don Treader. Since we were on that.
There is a good reason. I have some students who actually want to do an honors class over the summer. And it's bridging between, I just finished teaching them classical lit, and then I'm going to start teaching the same class, Brit Lit, next fall.
Right.
And so I need something that would be a fun, like, summer, but like an honors class level. So I was actually considering doing Narnia, but paired with Planet Narnia, and then tying
yeah,
it into, because we just finished classical lit, so it might be a looking at Lewis's
right.
use of mythology. In his
memorize
books.
That
and,
poem,
you know,
his poem, The Planets.
Oh, I didn't memorize it.
But you know that.
Well, I mean, I know.
I memorized it back in the day, but
okay.
I'm sure I could.
But see, it seems like that might be, I haven't decided that's what I'm going to do, but it seems like that might be kind of fun because some of them, I'm sure, haven't read the Narnia books since they were, like, really little.
Yeah.
So revisiting them. I mean, I know reading Narnia is not, like, honors-level stuff, but
no,
at the
but
same
time... No, but it's
fun
time, to get them to do it again when they're older.
And then to pair it with a kind of more academic take on it.
Be really
might
fun.
Be interesting. And we're going to start Brit Lit next
year. You're never too old for Narnia.
No,
you just
and
keep reading
that's
them.
The thing. I started reading Magician's Nephew again. I'm like, oh, I haven't read this
so
since
good.
The kids were little. And, like, it was really time yeah. to revisit it. But we've also... we're going to read... Lewis right at the beginning of the year because I have the students read That Hideous Strength paired with we're doing a Middle English component and we do a lot of the Arthurian legends and stuff, so it's fun.
Well, guys, we talked the recorder right out of batteries and in an awesome way, just like those phone conversations where someone hangs up and you don't notice and you're like 4 minutes into your story before
we don't
you
know where we left off.
Wherever we left you hanging,
we
just
might
know
have...
that the most captivating things came right after that.
Yeah, and so anyway, we should probably just...
no. I get enclosure. Because, that'll do, pig.
Because the battery died, we have no way of accessing it. We have no way of
ascertaining,
so. So we don't know where we left you.
Forgive us for this.
Maybe next week we'll go back and we'll have a little insert whatever maybe, it was.
Maybe not. Maybe we'll leave you guessing forever. So, well, have anyway, a good week. We will be back with more tales of summer stress. Bye. Bye.
New St. Andrews College thanks you for listening.